First of all, welcome everybody. It's people who come in the snow, especially those who are from Florida here, get a special schar halicha. So welcome. It's a privilege to be able to share words of Torah with you today. I wanted to particularly, if it's take a personal privilege here for just a moment, that is that 30 days ago, my aunt passed away, and this is her shloshim. I wanted to dedicate the learning today in her loving memory. The reasons are obvious. Number one, she's my aunt and shloshim, but the reasons are much more compelling than that, and that is that she had a tremendous, she made a tremendous impact on my life. Everybody always has this one relative that they feel they can talk to when they have challenges and issues, stuff within their life. She was that one relative to me. During dating and during the engagement period and the challenges that sometimes go along with that, she was that person for me. And throughout my adult life, she was a mentor, and it's appropriate that I dedicate the learning in loving memory of Jean Lockholder and all that she did to truly help me and enlighten me, especially since we're focusing on the halachas of Hanukkah. The ideas that we're going to talk about today are really ideas that are based on shiurim of Rabbi Soloveitchik, as well as private shiurim that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave on Hanukkah. There was a group that had the opportunity for many years to learn with Rabbi Soloveitchik in his apartment. One night a week, the Shamashim and selected others, grandchildren and others, were invited to the apartment, and we would learn with Rabbi Soloveitchik. Sometimes it would be Rambam, sometimes it would be Menachos Chinuch. We learned for many years. And some of the thoughts that come, that I will try to express today, are from those private discussions and public shiurim that the Rav gave on Hilchos Hanukkah. So without any further ado, let us begin the studies of the laws of Hanukkah. It is interesting that the Rambam, in his introduction to the Mishneh Torah, writes something very interesting that actually was one of the reasons why he was excommunicated. And that is, the Rambam writes that his entire agenda here, and that's why he calls this Mishneh Torah, is essentially all you have to do is basically study the Tanakh, and then you can jump the rest of the history of the oral development of Torah, namely the Talmud, and you can study my Mishneh Torah. The Fikach, says the Rambam, Karati Shema Chibur to Mishneh Torah, Fisha Adam Karei Torah Shebiksav Chila. First you have to read Tanakh, Va'acharkach Karei Bazeh, then just read my books, my Yad Chazaka, my 14 volumes. You can skip the Talmud. And you'll learn all of Torah Shabbat. Ve'eno tzarech likro sefer acher b'nehem. And then you don't have to read any other book besides mine. And those were not words that everybody was so ecstatic about when you were concretizing the history of halacha in an organized way, in which the whole notion of achlokes, the whole understanding of the evolution of the halachic process, was essentially neutered from the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. So not too many people were ecstatic about that comment. But it's important to realize that comment, because it's really displayed in very pristine ways in the halachas of Hanukkah. So if we open up our handout, the first thing that we see here with the Rambam's Hilchos Hanukkah is, first of all, just the koteret. The Rambam writes, Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah. This, in and of itself, is important for us to realize that there's a deviation here. First of all, the laws of Megillah and Chanukah are now being placed in one set of halachas, four parakim or so. The first two are the laws of Purim, and the last two chapters are the laws of Chanukah. Why is it that the Rambam insists, the Rambam, the quintessential organizer, insists of taking two different holidays and putting them under one chapter head? He doesn't put Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuot under one chapter head. He doesn't have Hilchot Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot. He doesn't have Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur under one chapter head. But yet, he feels that Megillah and Chanukah needs to be under one chapter head. So that's question number one. And also, there's another interesting thing here. The Rambam follows the calendrical order. He follows the order of the calendar. He starts out with the halachas of Pesach, then moves to the halachas of Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, etc. Yom Kippur he keeps separate because Yom Kippur is a form of Shabbos and therefore it is codified separately. But when it comes to the Chagim, he starts with Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot. But when it comes to the rabbinic holidays, Purim and Chanukah, he deviates from the calendar order because if you start from the month of Nisan, you hit Kislev, the month of Kislev, before you hit the month of Adar. But if you notice here, the Rambam mentions first the laws of Purim, then the laws of Chanukah, deviating from the calendar order. So the question is, why does the Rambam deviate from this calendar order? The Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, who mimics the Rambam's calendar, namely, when it comes to the biblical holidays, he first discusses Pesach, then Rosh Hashanah, then Yom Kippur, then Sukkot. But when it comes to the rabbinic holidays, the Shulchan Aruch is consistent. He first starts with several simanim focusing on Chanukah, because it comes first after Nisan. And then he discusses Purim, because Adar comes much later after Nisan. And the Shulchan Aruch seems to be more organized than the Rambam, because the Shulchan Aruch does not have Purim and Chanukah under one heading, under one chapter heading. He has several different chapters dealing with first, as I said before, Chanukah, and then several other chapters dealing with Purim. So the two questions that we begin with here is, why is it that the Rambam has one chapter for Purim and Chanukah, and he mixes them together? Why doesn't he keep them as distinct? And why does he deviate from the calendar order, namely first doing Purim, which is much later in the calendar, than Chanukah? Anyone have any suggestions for this? Suggestions why the Rambam does this? Yes.
Because he looks at in the case of the Halachas Rabbanan, he looks at when they were actually formulated. The Halachas of Purim were formulated before the Halachas of Chanukah. In the case of the Torah, all the halachas came out of the Torah. So then he simply went in what you call calendrical order. But in the case of Din Rabbanan, chronologically, you had halachas of Megillah before you had halachas of Chanukah.
Okay, Rabbi Soloveitchik basically took that approach, developed it a little bit more, and that is the following. What's your name?
Tzvi Weiss.
Tzvi. So Tzvi says beautifully that the Rambam, at least when it came to holidays, it's not true about all rabbinic law, when it comes to holidays, the Rambam does not follow the calendar order, but the historical order. Purim happens earlier than Chanukah. Purim is pre-Bayasheni, and Chanukah is during Bayasheni. So the Rambam follows the order of history. But why is that? Because if you look at Purim, the Rav answered just like the Rav answered, but the Rav developed it a little bit more. The Rav said, look at the Gemara Megillah, Adat Zayin Amud Aleph, says the following. That what happens is that Sholcha Lehem Esther, I don't have that in the handout, Sholcha Lehem Esther Lechachamim, Kavuni Ledoros. Esther says, I want you to establish a holiday to all generations. And what happens is, they respond, Kina Atma Oreret Aleinu Levein HaUmot. You're going to create jealousy that we were so successful. And Esther says, what do you mean? It is already written in the books of history of Malchei Madai Paras. It's not like you're introducing the holiday of Purim new. It's already there. But nevertheless, the rabbis do not initially establish the holiday of Purim. In fact, if you read carefully the last chapters of Megillas Esther, you'll see that there's one request to establish the holiday, and it doesn't seem like it goes anywhere, and then there's another request, and then it's established. And if you look at the commentaries of the Ramban and others in several locations, they explain that the reason why the Megillah mentions it twice is to celebrate the challenge that there was, that initially the rabbis were not interested in adding Purim. Why didn't they want to add Purim? That's why when there are certain people that do not yet celebrate Yom HaTzmaut, it doesn't really bother me that much, because the Purim was the same thing. Not everybody embraced it right away. It took a little while. So when the Gemara Megillah Daf Yud Aleph says the following, the Gemara says that there were Arba'im B'Shmona Neviim, there were 48 prophets, the Sheva Neviot and 7 prophetess, Nidnabu Lahem Yisrael, they prophesied to the Jewish people, V'lo B'chatzu V'lo Hutiru Amash Katzu B'Torah. They did not add to the Torah, they did not transgress the prohibition about Tulsif, of adding, except when it came to Purim. Purim, there was a feeling that that was about Tulsif. You're adding a new holiday. What right do you have to add a new holiday? So the Gemara says that they eventually came to the conclusion that it's not a new holiday. Why? Because under the signature of Pesach, we learned the following law. If we celebrate an experience that we moved from being slaves to being free people, so surely we can celebrate any holiday in which the Jewish people are redeemed in a much larger way. And what's the much larger way? When they are saved from death. Pesach, we were saved from being slaves and we celebrated. Purim, which we're about to be annihilated and we are saved. So surely under the legal precedence of Pesach, you're allowed to celebrate Purim. And that's what the Gemara in Yud Aleph, the Gemara Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, comes to the conclusion why it's permitted to have the holiday of Purim. So Purim receives its legitimacy as a new chag under the umbrella, so to say, of Pesach. Where does Hanukkah receive its legitimacy? Why, when the Hashmonaim wanted to establish Purim, why did the Hashmonaim, when they wanted to establish a new holiday, why wasn't there a whole tension within the Gemara? They're not allowed to add a new holiday. It's considered about Tosif. You only find that challenge when it comes to the holiday of Purim. So the reason Rabbi Soloveitchik explained was the entire legitimacy behind the holiday of Hanukkah. The reason why there wasn't this give and take was because a precedent was already established. The holiday of Purim, in which we know when we were saved from annihilation, from certain challenges, that we are permitted to establish a holiday. Which was also the reason why Rabbi Soloveitchik said he didn't understand why there was a challenge regarding Yom Tzimut. Because Yom Tzimut also represented the idea that the Jewish people were in great distress. And it celebrates the redemption from that distress. It fits under that umbrella, that prerequisite that is necessary. So the Rambam, realizing that the whole reason why Hanukkah was permitted as a holiday, the Rambam does not follow, as Zvi said so beautifully, the calendar order, but rather the historical order. Because the legal precedent for Hanukkah is Purim.
Wasn't there a mistake too by Hanukkah as far as the Mishnah Berurah? It wasn't immediate.
It wasn't, but the Gemara doesn't speak about the tension. Right, the next year they had to think it over, they had to decide how to establish it, they had to decide exactly what were the miracles, but the whole precedent of Hanukkah comes from Purim. Now, I'm going to show you, I want to just take this idea a little bit further, because it's so clear that that's what the Rambam's doing. Now, why is it that the Shulchan Aruch follows a calendar order and doesn't follow the historical order of the Rambam? It's not like the Shulchan Aruch didn't know how the Rambam set it up, right? The Rambam was written first. The answer is that the Shulchan Aruch's agenda, its mission statement, was different than the Rambam's. The mission statement of the Shulchan Aruch was to create an ordered table for the Jew in the diaspora. Therefore, he doesn't discuss the laws of building the Beit HaMikdash. He doesn't discuss the laws of Karbanot. That's not part of his agenda. His agenda is to discuss the laws that a Jew will need in the diaspora. He doesn't discuss the laws of warfare, of a Jewish army. Those laws, until the modern state of Israel, were 2,000 plus years old and needed to be dusted off. The Rambam, as we just said, his agenda was not to create an order table. His agenda was to codify all of the oral tradition. Therefore, the Rambam, in his interest in concretizing the oral tradition, is not interested in creating an ordered table, but to show you the historical development of the oral tradition. The historical development of the oral tradition requires that you write about Purim first, and then Hanukkah. You deviate, in this case, from the calendar order. But even more than that, since they are a one and the same holiday, they are in some way a celebration of being redeemed from a tragic event, they are not listed as two distinct holidays with two different chapters, but rather they are listed as one. Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah. And there are several other things. Let me just finish this point, then I'll take questions. There are several other things that the Rambam does to celebrate the idea that his agenda, and it's clearly seen in these laws, is to codify the oral tradition. First of all, look at Halacha Aleph. Look what the Rambam does in Halacha Aleph. B'bayit sheni, kishemachut yavan gazru gezerot a Yisrael, u'batlu datam, and during the Second Temple period, when the Greek Hellenists were creating these laws that the Jewish people could no longer keep their tradition. So what did he do? The God saves the Jewish people using the Chashmonaim. What is the Rambam doing here? He's telling us the story of Hanukkah. Does the Rambam tell us the story of Purim? No. Does he tell us the story of Pesach? He tells us the story of Shavuot? He doesn't tell us any stories. This is the only holiday that in the Mishnah Torah the story is told. Why is that? Yes. No, not, there's Pesumei Nisa in Pesach also. Why do we have the David Kosot? So you should tell the story of Purim. Save the Jewish people, he doesn't tell the story. What was your answer? Therefore, the story of Hanukkah is part of, well, say it even better. The story of Hanukkah is part of the oral tradition or the written tradition? Right. What's the Rambam's agenda in the Mishnah Torah? To put together the oral tradition. So unlike the story of Purim, the story of Pesach, which is part of the Parashat Mitzvah, which he says in the Rambam's introduction, you still have to read Tanakh, right? It's the Gemara you don't have to read after I wrote my book, right? So everything in Tanakh, I don't need to tell you. Other than the Rambam says that in the time of Mashiach, the five books of the Torah and the Megillas Esther will be the only books of Tanakh that will have importance to them, which we can discuss in our conclusion. But the bottom line is, the Rambam's interest here is to focus on the oral tradition. And since the Rambam's agenda is to focus on the oral tradition, he does not write the laws, he does not tell you the story of Purim, that you have Tanakh for. He does not tell you the story of Pesach, that you have the Sefer Shemos, and the Egg of Bereshis. Shavuos is in the Torah. The only thing that does not have a book that is concretized as part of Tanakh is Hanukkah. That's the first thing you see. Now look at what else the Rav does. The Rav mentioned when we discussed this. Aleph and Bet are the stories of Hanukkah. Look at the Halacha Gimel for a second. Umitnezeh, and because of this experience, Hitkinu Chachamim Shavuot Odor, the rabbis of that generation, Shiyu Shmonat Hayamim Elu, that these 8 days, Shetchilatam Elel Chamisha Ve'esrim Kislev, starting from the 25th of Kislev, Yemei Simcha V'Hallel, should be days of Simcha and Hallel, U'madlikim V'hem Neros, and you should light candles, V'erev, and in the evening, Al-Pitchei Abatrim, B'chol Laila V'Laila, on the outside of your houses every single night. Yishmonas Hallelos, from the 8 nights, Laharos, U'langadlos, Hanes, to show the miracle. V'yomim Ha'elu, Hain Nikran Chanukah, they call Chanukah. Behain, and they are forbidden, Asurim, the Hesped with Tainis. You can't eulogize or fast. Ki Yamei HaPurim, like Purim. Every time the Rambam tells you a halacha about Chanukah, you want to know why that halacha applies to Chanukah? Because it applies to Purim. Because where does Chanukah get its legitimacy from? From the holiday of Purim. The Hadlakas Neros, the lighting of the candles, the Hen Mitzvahs Medivrei Sofrim, it is considered a Mitzvah Medivrei Sofrim, Kikriyas HaMegillah, like the reading of the Megillah. Every time the Rambam will discuss, look at Halacha Dalet, Kol Shechaya B'Kriyat HaMegillah, anyone who's obligating the reading of the Megillah, Chayav HaHalachas Ner Chanukah, is Chayav to light the candles. You want to know the paradigm is always goes back to the experience of Purim. Every time the Rambam introduces a halakha of Chanukah, he needs to say, Kriyas HaMegillah, Kippurim. Because the whole reason why you are permitted to have a holiday like Chanukah is based on the fact that there was Purim, where the rabbis fought it out in a spiritual sense in order that they came to the conclusion that any time the Jewish people are redeemed en masse, there's a need to celebrate it under the umbrella of Pesach. So the Rambam here is really showing his stripes in a very, very important way. He is truly celebrating the ideas of what it means to be the person who puts together Torah Shabbat Pesach. He deviates from the calendar order because he follows historical precedents. He considers it under one title because that's the only way Hanukkah was permitted. He tells the story of Hanukkah because that is part of the oral tradition, not the written tradition. And when he introduces any of the halachot of Hanukkah, he always connects them back to their legitimate halachic pointer, their legitimate halachic precedent, and that is the halachas of Purim. Any questions? Yes.
Okay, so I had a similar thought in terms of the Torah Shabbat, but yet on the other hand, the Torah Shabbat has an entire second Megillah, and Hanukkah only has that little Keta
in Shabbos.
Shabbos, so.
You're right. First of all, not that much of the second Megillah is totally on
Megillah,
like every Mesechta. Secondly, why they did what they did, we'll get to in a second. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to speak in great depth about why the story of Hanukkah is put in the tractate of Shabbos. We'll discuss that. Why?
The Rambam also, I'm just wondering how that relates to what the Rambam did as well.
I'm not sure it relates in any way, and maybe it does. Why the rabbis picked to give the Sefet Megillah a full Sefet and Hanukkah less, there are clearly certain communal components to the Purim celebration, the reading of the Megillah, that requires a whole perek to discuss regarding the shuk and the marketplace, which Hanukkah doesn't really need. Why they do what they do, I don't have an answer to that. Why it's placed in Masechet Shabbat, I do think there's a beautiful reason, and we will discuss that. Please go. Any other questions? Yes. What is he saying? He does?
He's saying, he'll
hopefully kill Hanukkah. He says that once. The Yom Eilu Nikroim Hanukkah, the Hemasur, the Hesped of Tanis, Kinei Purim. I think that what he's doing. Oh, Hilchos Megillah of Hanukkah. Because I think he's focusing on the mitzvah. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer. Thank you.
There's a real takkan is to read the Megillah.
And that's Hanukkah.
There's three other Megillah. There's three other mitzvahs too.
Yeah, but those are not giving. Yes, but those can be subsumed under stuck making a seuda. I mean, there's no Isra Malacha, so those don't really bring out the Rabbanan aspect of it like Kriyas HaMegillah. Kriyas HaMegillah is what the Gemara seems to focus on, was the issue that they had. When Nastra said, she wasn't talking about making a suda. She was talking about the Megillah. That's why they answered, Kina Akma tell us. Right? There wouldn't be Kina just about sending Mishlach Hanav. There wouldn't be Kina just about making a suda like that's what Yonah
is. It's called Megillah.
It's called Megillah because the Takana was really the Takana HaMegillah.
That's a good question. I never thought about it. It's a good question. I never thought about it. These are good answers. I think, I think you have to look at how the Rambam develops some of the other halachot in order to be able to answer that to his koteret there. But it's a good question. And yes.
You threw out a term before you moved that, and you didn't really get into it, and that was the notion of the halachos of Mikra and Megillah being related somehow to the shuk of the marketplace.
Right.
Well, Hanukkah is related to the shuk of the marketplace. Is there a connection there?
I don't think so. I think that the theater of experience of the Megillah is in other words, a public, they both have a public display because of Persume Nisa, so maybe there is. Pesume Nisa of Hanukkah is a Pesume Nisa aspect. The Pesume Nisa aspect of Purim also. So maybe there is. That's a very good point. Yeah. Very good point. Sure. The Rambam does one other interesting thing here that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to discuss. And that is, look at Halacha Hey, Halacha Vav, Halacha Zion, halacha chet that I have for you here, and halacha tet, halacha yud aleph, halacha yud bet, halacha yud gimel, halacha yud aleph. And tell me what the Rambam is doing here. It's pretty odd. What is the Rambam doing here? What does the Rambam throw in the middle of the laws of Hanukkah?
The laws of Hanukkah.
The laws of Hanukkah. If you were writing this major piece on the organization of halachot, where would you put the laws of halal? These are all the laws of halal. These are the laws of halal for Pesach. These are the laws of halal when you only say half halal. These are all the laws of halal. There's the bracha you say in halal. Why throw them in, right? Throw them in Hanukkah. But did you forget to put them in the laws of prayer? You said, oh my God, I forgot. This is like the final piece of the holidays. So I'm just going to throw it in here at the end. I mean, what's the Rambam doing here? What's the Rambam doing here? You're supposed to be this master. Where does Shulchan Aruch, by the way, put the laws of halal? Shulchan Aruch puts the laws of halal where we would think. I think if we were writing the Mishnah Torah, we would put the laws of halal right after Shemoneh Esrei in Tefillah. But the Rambam doesn't do that.
This is not an expression of Tefillah. Clearly, it's what the Rambam is saying.
Okay, but you have to develop that a little bit more. That's a beautiful answer.
Established at the time.
Yeah, it was established way before that. It's not a historical thing.
Maybe it was a halal share to come to find Kakarish Warfare. Halal will go up in both forms of expression.
What form?
Halakhah Sneris and halal will go.
Okay.
Both essential aspects.
Alright, we have to, that's also good. That's similar to what Mr. Gorish just said, but it has really be developed a little bit more. Rabbi Soloveitchik, anyone else? Anyone else? Does everyone understand the question? Why the laws of Hallel thrown into Hilchos Chanukah, a rabbinic holiday, as opposed to putting them in Hilchos Pesach, if you want to throw them in a holiday, throw them in a biblical holiday, or Hilchos Sukkos, where Hallel is Hallel Shalem, the whole, because according to Sheikha the Rambam, the mitzvah is Ligmor is a Hallel, right? The bracha, as the Sephardim say, and it's quite honestly, as Rabbi Soloveitchik said, is that Sherek Yishanah comes to going to live more as a Hallel. In fact, my children heard, when they sit next to me davening, they heard me say the bracha on Hallel. I say, Sherek Yishanah comes to going to live more as a Hallel like Rabbi Soloveitchik. So apparently they started saying live more as a Hallel. And the Rebbeim said to them, they shouldn't say that because they're not Sephardim. So my son, Yoni, who's pretty... has no barriers in this discussion with his teachers. He said to him, well, my father says it that way. So they said, well, your father can't say it that way because your grandfather doesn't say it that way. So, my children came home and I said they have to follow their grandfather and they have to say Likro is a Hallel, not Ligmor is a Hallel like Rabbi Soloveitchik said. So, there is this tension within Rabbi Soloveitchik felt that the mitzvah is Ligmor is a Hallel, so maybe put the halachas of Hilchos Sukkah where you have this, where you have the notion of halal in its complete form. By the way, the Rambam, Hilchos Megillah B'Chanukah, has one line after that, and that's why I wanted this. Thank you very much for bringing it to me. He says, Yesh B'Chlolam Shtei Mitzvot Aseh B'Divrei Sofer. There are two mitzvot here. So with the reason why the Rambam calls it Megillah B'Chanukah is that he probably views Megillah as the one, and the Chanukah, the Chanukiah, maybe as the other one, and therefore maybe he's listing the mitzvot. It's a good question. I don't really know the answer to that question that was raised earlier. Yes.
You see that the Rambam does the same thing as Hallel Tefillah because he compares, he says by Purim, the reason you don't read the Gemara gave many reasons why you don't say why you don't say Hallel on Purim.
Right.
And the Rambam chose the reason of Kriyas HaMegillah as Hallel as opposed to an after Shvirah. And right, yeah. So therefore you see it's not, so you see right here that the Ram doesn't think that Hallel Tefillah is some sort of part of the celebration of the Yom Tovim, right?
But why put it in the rabbinic holiday of Hanukkah? Put it in Sukkot. Everybody's like getting close, but we're just trying to tease this out a little bit more.
That's a holiday here, it's for the Lord God, as opposed to, let's say, Pesach, which is...
Beautiful, beautiful. Rabbi Soloveitchik said exactly that. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that in Hilchos Tefillah, you only see one dimension of the halal experience. Halal hadibur. A halal that is enunciated with words. But the home etzem mahut, the identity of Chanukah is halal. halal hadibur and halal hamaisa, a halal of words and a halal of actions. Why do we light the Hanukkah candles? Why do we eat matzah on Pesach? We eat matzah on Pesach because it's lechem oni, and it's very important, and we drink the dal kosot for the four redemptions. We shake a little bit etro for all of it, and they all land up eventually reminding us of a relationship to Hanukkah, a relationship to God. But if you look at what is Hanukkah all about, the Gemara says, "Va'asum yomim tovim." These days were made v'halav v'hodah. The etzem identity, the entire identity of Hanukkah is k'day l'hodot u'lahalel, is about thanking God. That is the theme of the day. The theme of Pesach is redemption from Egypt. The theme of Sukkot is our interdependence with God. The theme of Shavuos is Matan Torah. What is the theme of Hanukkah? K'day l'hodos u'lahalel. To be able to celebrate our relationship to God. And therefore, since that is the etzem, the whole purpose of the day, as the Rambam himself writes, that the whole purpose of this is, you may simcha b'hallel. So, k'day laharos l'gadlos is anes. The whole etzem, the whole identity of Hanukkah is the hallel. It says, Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say, the Rambam waited. The hallel is seen in its quintessential form, like Hanukkah, and not in the laws of tefillah, where only one dimension of hallel is seen. The hallel of dibur, the hallel of speaking, but there's no hallel hamaisa. We light the candles, we say, haneros halalu kodeshein, ve'en la rishut l'hishtameis v'hem, but what do we light them for? Kidei l'hodos u'lahallel, to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when the Rambam decided where he would put the laws of hallel, he put them in a place in which hallel is seen in its most pristine form. A hallel of words and a hallel of actions. A hallel that is said in tefillah, we say hallel our Hanukkah, and a hallel that is demonstrated in a more complete way, and that is a hallel through actions, the whole reason for writing the Hanukkiah. Therefore, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, it was not that the Rambam said, oh, I forgot the laws of hallel, I need to put them at the end of the book that deals with all of the Hilchot Zmanim, all the laws of the holidays. He specifically waited to the holiday in which hallel is seen in its most perfect form. And therefore, you see, as we've just talked about, I want to focus on one other beautiful idea behind Hanukkah. This is not really words that I heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik, but I think it's a beautiful idea. If we look at source number 3 of our handout, we'll see the following idea. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis learn, Mitzvah Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah, Ner Ish Ubeito, is for every person and his and for his house. It's a mitzvah on the house. Vahamahadrin, near the pol echad the echad. Mahadrin is that one candle every night. In other words, even on the eighth day, you would light one candle per each person in the home. Vahamahadrin, mahadrin, and the mahadrin, mahadrin. The best way to celebrate it is that each person has, or that there is a amount of candles dependent on the amount of days. It is interesting that this is really the only Mahadrin and a Mahadrin that the whole world Jewish community celebrates. You don't see those elected menorahs just have a Mahadrin. They'll keep one light on, right? And just follow that way. There is this, everyone keeps Mahadrin and a Mahadrin. And Rabbi Soloveitchik used to mention to us, it was because this is really the first, holiday which has no, biblical, as we said earlier, no biblical book. And it was a focus, a celebration of the fact that we truly embrace the rabbi's holidays, and therefore it became the Minhag Yisrael to celebrate it in its Mahadrim and the Mahadrim form. But let's look at something very interesting here. There's a Machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, how you light for a Mahadrim and a Mahadrim. So, what is Beit Shammai? We're all familiar with this. Beit Shammai Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Shmona Mikan Ve'Elech Pochis the whole way. But Shammai says, first day you light eight, then you go and you do less and less and less. Beitilo Omrin, Beis Hillel says, Yom Rishon Ladik Echas, the first day you light one, Mikan Ve'elef Mosipa Halech, and then from then on and further, you add one. Amar Ula, Ula says, Pligi Batre Amarai Bamarava, two Amarayim in Palestine, Yerushalayim, argue, Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi Bar Svida, they argue what the machlokes is between Becham and Betila. Chad Amar, one says, this is an easy reason, Tama de Bechamai, Kineg Yaman HaNechnasim. When you should count how many days are going to be upon us. So the first night you light eight because there are 8 days left of Hanukkah. The second day you light seven because there are 7 days left, etc., etc. But Tama the Beit Hillel, and the reason the Beit Hillel is Kineged Yomim Hayotzim, based on the days that have departed. You light one on the first day of Hanukkah because 1 day has departed. Okay, that's a very good reason. There's no questions on that one. B'chad Amar, and then there's another reason given. The other reason given is Tamad Beit Shammai, the reason of Beit Shammai, is Keneged Parei HaChag. It's opposite the Parei HaChag. It's opposite it's because on Sukkot, we bring a whole bunch of sacrifices, and then slowly we descend in the amount of sacrifices we bring, until in Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah, we only bring one. So Beit Shammai says, the same way on Sukkot, you descend, you also descend on Hanukkah. And Beit Hillel says, that Tamad Beit Hillel, Dema'alim B'Kodesh Bein Maridim. You increase holiness, you don't decrease holiness. What's the logic behind Beit Shammai? Because the holiday of Sukkot, you went from a large amount of sacrifices to a small amount of sacrifices. That's why on Hanukkah, you also go from 8 to 1? What's the logic? What's the connection? Find another holiday. I mean, that doesn't make, what sense does it make? So some have suggested that if you look at the Book of Maccabees, you'll see that they carried a lulav and etrog after Hanukkah, and the reason for that could be because the lulav celebrates redemption, or it could be because they couldn't celebrate Sukkot that year. But that's not the reason. What's the Shammai? Connecting Mashmita Azar Sinai. What's he connecting the laws of Sukkot to the laws of Hanukkah? So I think that in order to understand this Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel regarding how you light the Chanukiah, how you light the Hanukkah lights, you have to understand the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in general regarding the notion of fire. Because there's another place where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue regarding the notion of fire. And allow me to, let me share it with you. Source number four is just the Rashi. Turn to the next page. Not just the Rashi, it's the Rashi. Let's look at source five. Source number five says the following. Elu tivarim shebein beit shammai ubeit hillel v'suda. These are the differences between Shammai and Hillel when it comes to the laws of Suda. When it comes to the law of food. There's a whole bunch of differences. I did not put them all down here because we don't have time to go through them all. They're not all relevant to us. What are the ones that are relevant to us? Beit Shammai Omrim, Beit Shammai says, you do the following. Ner umazon, besamim v'havdalah, Beit Hillel Omrim, ner besamim umazon v'havdalah. Okay, that's also not so. Here's the key piece. Beit Shammai Omrim, Beit Shammai says, shebara mo'or ha'esh. Every Saturday night, we make the bracha, not borei marei ha'esh, like Beit Hillel, but bara ma'or ha'esh. Beit Hillel says that the bracha you make is borei marei ha'esh. The Gemara tries to understand what is the difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. The Gemara says, bara ma'or ha'esh is focusing on the original fire experience. Borei marei ha'esh, because bara ma'or ha'esh is the past. I thank God for creating the first fire, Ma'or Ha'esh. Borei Ma'or Ha'esh is creating the many fires of the future. Rav Kook, on this Gemara, touches on an idea. He doesn't elaborate like I'm going about to explain, but I brought down the Rav Kook only for you to realize that the beginning of this idea is his, not mine. Rav Kook actually reminds us of a very important idea. remember, why is fire used on Friday night, on Saturday night? He says fire is used on Saturday night because it really celebrates the following. It's the first time in which you had a unique creation. You had no. What was unique about fire? There's a partnership between God and humankind. Because in fire, what do you have? You have that at a Saturday night, Adam rubbed two rocks together, and God put into nature the ability to create fire. But it was humankind that moved the rocks back and forth to essentially create that fire experience. So it's actually a creativity that's a partnership between God and humankind. Says Beit Shammah. That was Rav Kook. Now this is me, so you can totally take it or leave it. Okay? Says Beit Shammah. On Saturday night, when we're about to enter the world again, we recite Havdalah. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to explain that there are two Kiddushes that are recited. There's the Kiddush of Friday night, which is the Kiddush to welcome in Shabbos, and then there's the Kiddush of Saturday night, which is the Kiddush to welcome in the week. Havdalah is the Kiddush of to welcome in the week. Beit Shammah says the following. How does an individual make sure that all of their creative energies during the week are being used to truly improve society? Beit Shammah says, retreat to the original rendezvous between God and humankind, the original act of creativity, bara ma'or ha'esh, the first fire that was created, that first Saturday night. That's what you have to do. Because you have to retreat to that experience in order to make sure that you're using your energy during the week in a proactive, appropriate way. Beit Hillel says, yes, you have to remember that first experience. But we don't have the luxury in our responsibilities to society to retreat to the original experience. Borei me'orei ha'esh. We have to make a bracha that celebrates all of the future lights that happened after the original light that was able to dispel darkness around the world. Because our responsibility in society is to transform society. Whatever occupation that we're in, whatever we do, our responsibility is to transform society. That's what the 6 days of the week are all about. Borei me'orei ha'esh, yes, Beit Shammah is easier. Bara me'orei ha'esh, retreat to the original experience. And maybe in the world to come, we follow Beit Shammah, because in the world to come, we don't have to make tough decisions. We don't have the same tough challenges. But in this world, says Beit Hillel, we recite Borei me'orei ha'esh. We have to focus on the future fires, the future lights that we're going to create. That is the kernel of their machlokas by Havdalah. That's the kernel of their machlokas also when it comes to Hanukkah. The mitzvah of Hanukkah is to light Hanukkah lights in the public domain. It's to light them in the public domain. And the idea is, when you are involved in the public domain, how do you make sure that you succeed? Says Beit Shammah, follow the precedent, the paradigm of Sukkot. We light 70, we bring karbanot for 70 different nations. But at the end of the day, we just focus on our insular relationship with God. Keneged parechad, we go down to one. And in order to make sure that you don't fail in your request to society, always remember that insular celebration that is found in Sukkot. Beit Hillel says, we don't have that luxury. You have a responsibility when it comes to fire, which celebrates the rendezvous between God, the partnership between God and humankind to be creative. Ma'alim b'kodesh v'ein moridim. You don't decrease the lights. You have to increase the lights. Always increase the lights. You don't have a right to go down to one. You don't have a right to be insular in your perspective. You have the responsibility to always increase the lights. That's machlokas Beit Shammah Beit Hillel. How do you deal with fire, which is the first creation that is a partnership between God and humankind? Beit Shammah always says, run to Barama or Ha'esh, run to that original rendezvous. Go Keneged Parei Achav, decrease the amount of lights that you light, to remind yourself always about that responsibility to be insular in order to protect yourself. Beitila says no. Always create more lights. Sure, understand where the root is from. Sure, understand where your root, where your base is from, but always light more lights. This is why Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say that the rabbis waited to the law, to Shabbat to put the laws of Hanukkah. Because the rabbis are trying to communicate a very important message. The message goes both ways. It is a celebration of the dialectic, the celebration of the tension of life. On the one hand, Judaism does not believe in a Robinson Crusoe lifestyle. It does not believe in the Shabbos experience by itself. It does not believe that the person can just live in a Shabbos experience. And therefore, etched within the Shabbos experience, etched within the second Shabbos, is the laws of Hanukkah. The responsibility to go out into society. My Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? Hanukkah is about lighting lights outside in society. It's about lighting lights in the public thoroughfare of life. It's about making sure that you are engaged within society. But Judaism also realizes that the person that is only in the public thoroughfare, the person who is only the Hanukkah Jew, but doesn't understand the value of Shabbos, will not succeed. Because ultimately, if you don't create the Rishus HaYachid, the private domain, if you don't work on the private domain, which is what Shabbos is all about, not moving from the private to the public, not walking Dalet Amos within the public domain, if you don't make sure that your private domain is solid, if you don't make sure that your family is solid, if you don't make sure that your family relationships are solid, if you don't make sure that your interactions are solid in the way that you develop yourself, if you don't make sure the Rishus HaYachid is solid, then you will never have the energy to affect the Rishus HaRabbim. It's that tension that the rabbis wanted us to understand. And that is why the laws of Hanukkah are placed not in the Masechet Megillah, not in the Masechet Sukkot or the Masechet Pesachim, but they are placed in the Masechet Shabbos to remind us of the tension that every one of us has to go through. In Mirat Hashem, we will truly be able to celebrate Hanukkah with the recognition of these ideas. The recognition of the ideas that are mentioned, and that is that Hanukkah represents the ability for us to be involved in creating our own holidays, in creating our own destiny, which is why the Rambam writes at the end of the tractate, in the end of the halachas of Hanukkah and Purim, he writes that after the time of Mashiach, the only sefer of Nach, and of Torah, of Nach, that will be important is the Megillah, because Megillah shows us that we have the ability to choreograph our own redemption if we find God inside ourselves. Because the Megillah does not mention God's name. There's no prophecy. It's we found God inside ourselves. And hopefully we will understand the tension that the rabbis are trying to communicate between the Rishus HaYachid and the Rishus HaRabbim, of making sure that we always stay strong on both fronts, never retreating from society, but always remembering that society needs to be seen through the prism of Jewish values, which can only be established if we truly make sure that we're focusing on our own self-growth and our own self-development. Thank you very much.